This is the Best Health Podcast, brought to you by Wake Forest Baptist Health in partnership with MedCost.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the latest episode of the Best Health Podcast. Thank you for joining us today from all of us at Wake Forest Baptist Health. We appreciate you listening to today's episode. I wanted to talk today about just kind of continuing our conversation around COVID-19 and coronavirus-related topics. In some of our previous topics that we've covered around coronavirus, we've talked a little bit about stress and anxiety and how to manage that. And we've talked a little bit about stress eating. We've talked a little bit about maybe some coping skills. So just want to pick up on those conversations around mental health and wellness. You know, hearing from a lot of people out in the community that that is an area of interest during these unique times of coronavirus. So we have a really special guest joining us today from the behavioral health area of Wake Forest Baptist Health, Catherine Cheek. Before we bring Catherine into the conversation, I do want to just remind people, if they have any questions about COVID-19, about facts versus myths, clinic updates, assessment tools that they can take online, other podcasts, you're more than welcome to visit our website at wakehealth.edu/coronavirus, or you can call our COVID hotline that is manned 24/7 if you have questions. That's 336-70-COVID, 336-70-COVID, and we have people there waiting to answer your questions. On to my special guest today. I'm so excited. We have Catherine Cheek joining us. She's a licensed psychological associate here with our Wake Forest Baptist Health Network, behavioral medicine area. And I want to welcome you, Catherine. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and offer us some information and some guidance on today's topic. Before we dive in, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, where you're from, why'd you get into behavioral medicine, all that interesting stuff, and we can get started from there.
Sure. So I went to Appalachian State University, and that's where I got my degree in clinical psychology. Mm-hmm. I've been practicing as a licensed psychologist for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And worked in a variety of settings, but for the past 11 years, I've worked for this Wake Forest Health Network affiliate, and past 5 years, I've been embedded in a pediatric practice in High Point, North Carolina. So the reason
very
that I...
Interesting. Okay. So what drew you to the mental health field originally, Catherine?
I just really was naturally drawn to it. I was interested in the science behind psychology and the research, and I really wanted to help people. I like working with youth and children primarily because I like getting the opportunity to teach them some things that will help them not only now but for the rest of their lives, some things that I wish someone had taught me when I was their age. So,
Okay. That makes sense. That's a great point. Well, that's good information. And I just wanted to start off, you know, people listening have a variety of backgrounds and maybe have a varying levels of information around this idea of resilience. You know, you could probably go a few different directions based on, you know, how you're brought up and where, you know, what kind of parenting types of skills or what type of ideals that we were raised on. It can maybe mean different things for different people, and probably people have different experiences growing up around this idea of resilience. I guess just to start off, what is your definition of resilience when you're talking with with patients in your clinic area and you're walking through this idea. Maybe just describe how you approach it with them.
Sure. So we used to think of resilience as more of a trait, something that people were either born with or not. Mm-hmm. And what we've learned in psychology is that resilience is something that can be cultivated. And basically, my definition of it is people who are resilient have the ability to bounce back from adverse events, even traumatic events, and they can even grow from those events. So resilience involves adapting in healthy ways in the face of adversity or crisis.
You know, all of us have been probably affected one way or another by COVID-19, and it has maybe put varying levels of stress or other, heightened anxiety pieces into our lives. Whether, we're living now with more family members than we're accustomed to, because we're quarantined together and we're social distancing. We're in a little bit of a time of crisis here nationally, but here locally as well, as we're all trying to get through this situation. How does resilience help you in a time of crisis such as this?
Cultivating resilience in your life with healthy coping strategies basically enables you to not just get through the hardship, but to get through it in a healthy way and even to grow from it.
You know, times such as this, when we're looking around and kind of assessing our situation, maybe some of us day to day, things are changing in our lives. And we kind of have this idea of building resilience and adapting to and working from this. You mentioned earlier, it's not necessarily a trait, but how can we learn resilience? How would one go about learning resilience or some best practices for putting this practice into their daily lives?
Yes, so we can absolutely cultivate resilience. We can really, it involves finding balance in our different areas of human needs. And so that requires strategies and intentional effort to ensure that needs are being met in a variety of different areas, because we know that when our needs are being met, we increase that physical and psychological resilience.
Okay, that's interesting. So, to take that a step further, a lot of us are going through this virtual learning, e-learning process with our kids together, and their schedule's been thrown for a loop. They're not necessarily being able to hang out with their friends as much, and they can't see their teachers every day anymore. To take it a step further, how can we teach our children this idea of resilience?
So I think one of the most important things that we can do right now for our children is helping to structure a routine for them.
Yes.
That meets their needs. So, first and foremost, a routine for bedtime and wake time to ensure that their needs for sleep are being met. And then throughout the day, trying to structure the routine so that it meets other areas of needs. Social, of course, the school piece, teaching them, healthy ways to get exercise and get time outside and meet their different areas of need with that routine. And the parents are usually the ones who are structuring that routine. So teaching them to prioritize them, themselves and their different areas of needs is, in essence, helping to cultivate resilience for them. And then, of course, the other way that we teach our children resilience is through our own modeling of it. Mm. And so trying to be sure that we're practicing what we preach and you know, taking care of ourselves and coping in healthy ways, because our children are watching and learning from everything that we say and do.
That's so true, and that's a good reminder, for sure. Now, you know, I'll speak for myself, and maybe other people can relate to this possibly as well, but I don't, you know, as maybe we are trying to implement this idea of resilience into our lives and manage this odd time of flex schedules and you know, routines changing daily almost, you know, we're trying to do the best we can with this, right? And so it probably doesn't necessarily go from, oh man, I'm not really practicing that much resilience, to I'm practicing resilience like a boss. I have like level 100 resilience right now. It's more kind of a cultivation and growing through this process, right? It takes a little time. You know, how can we go about cultivating this idea of resilience with ourselves and our family?
So I think you nailed it, to say that on many times when we're in stressful circumstances, we are just in survival mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, the goal might be as a parent to get your child through the day and have them well fed and clean. And yeah, that's survival mode. But, you know, so I think part of it is being easy on ourselves and recognizing that we don't have to do this perfect, and that we're all just doing the best we can. And, you know, thinking about small ways that you can engage in self-care is critical. When you're busy, when you're in a crisis, I think our culture, unfortunately, promotes self-care as this big, expensive, elaborate process, like, you know, things that take a lot of time and things that take a lot of money, like massages or pedicures or big vacations. And those certainly are forms of self-care. But what I try to remind people of is that self-care can be everyday things that are free, things that are in your control every day. And these small things can make a big difference. It might be things like drinking enough water or spending some time outside on your lunch hour,
mm-hmm.
calling a friend on your way home from work,
mm-hmm.
Debriefing with your partner every day, posting an encouraging mantra in a prominent location to remind yourself to be mindful of your thoughts, making a daily to-do list to feel more mastery over your day.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all small, simple behaviors. You notice everything I mentioned is free. And so those little behaviors can make a big difference in your resilience.
Hey, just a quick break. Don't skip ahead, because if you like this show, then we want you to support those that make the Triad Podcast Network possible. And all of our podcasts are presented by The Ginther Group, a Triad real estate team with a vast local knowledge that you can also hear as our experts right here on the Triad Podcast Network. They provide evaluations to list and market homes for this spring season. And with the new reality we're all facing from the coronavirus pandemic, The Ginther Group has implemented strategies to adapt a virtual process. So if you're thinking of buying or selling a home in our community, just have a conversation with the Ginther Group and learn how they can help. Call them at 336-283-8689 or find them online at theginthergroup.com. G-I-N-T-H-E-R, theginthergroup.com. Now back to the show.
As y'all are working through this idea of resilience as a technique of managing our lives, especially in crisis, do y'all usually break it out into different areas? You know, I've talked with a couple of your colleagues on a couple of other podcasts, you know, and they maybe will reference certain areas of ourselves, such as physical, mental, or cognitive, spiritual. Do y'all kind of break that out into kind of different areas of needs when you're talking about resilience?
Yes. I really like to organize this in four core areas of needs. The first one is physical. The second one is social. The third is cognitive or thinking. Mm-hmm. And the fourth is spiritual needs.
Okay. So I guess looking at those four, first of all, what are their areas that they maybe have in common that we can all, if you kind of take across the board all those four areas, some things that we could take away from those that they have in common?
So that's really important to think about. All four of these areas are going to require planning. Most of the things that involve meeting your needs don't just happen spontaneously. They require some intention and some effort and some planning. Mm-hmm. Usually some time management to make these things happen. Mm-hmm. So they all require that. And really, they all involve things that are in our control, which is powerful because at times of crisis, we feel like so many things are out of our control. You know,
yes.
We cannot control this COVID pandemic.
Yes.
We cannot control that we don't know when the stay-home orders are going to lift. There are so many aspects that are out of our control, especially in a crisis. And it's easy to get over-focused on those things and overwhelmed by them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important and empowering to recognize that that there are a lot of things, even when things feel very overwhelming and out of control, there are a lot of things that are in our control that can really make a big difference in how we feel and how resilient we are in the face of a crisis. So when I'm faced with a crisis, one question that I like to ask myself, mm-hmm. and I like to ask my patients is I like to say, okay, so you kind of know you have this crisis that you're dealing with. How can you handle this with grace? How can you handle this with resilience? What do you think that's going to look like? And it usually involves a lot of self-care, a lot of planning to help the self-care happen and making healthy choices.
You know, I love that you brought that up, and that's such a great idea or reminder of just really not trying to let our minds start racing about the areas that we can't control. You know, you're so right that there are certain things that we are more in control of than others. And, you know, we can't control when this pandemic's going to be over, quote unquote, over, or at least in a more manageable stage. Or I also like the idea that you brought up the grace, you know, and this was brought up on an earlier podcast as well. And I thought it was a great point in that context of, you know, when we're looking at heightened stress and anxiety, for me, maybe sometimes it's when I get hangry, when I get, you know, I get in a bad mood when I'm hungry, and I am short on the grace, both to other people, sometimes, you know, extending grace to colleagues, to family members, to loved ones, to friends, or to even to yourself sometimes, you know, the idea of self-care. And, you know, I think one of the biggest issues sometimes in with people not being able to extend enough grace to themselves. So the idea of grace that you brought up in self-care, I think those are great points for people maybe to latch onto from this podcast. You know, as we go through the four areas you mentioned, the first one being physical, if we kind of take this idea of resilience and apply it specifically to the physical part of ourselves, what are some ideas or advice you would like to share about resilience in as it relates to the physical health of our bodies?
Right. So I always like to start with the physical piece because the physical piece involves our body's basic needs.
Yeah.
And so if we're not meeting our body's basic needs, then how can we look at higher order needs? We've got to be sure that that we're getting enough sleep, you know, getting good food into our body, moving our bodies, getting some exercise. And if those physical needs aren't being properly met, then it can really start a negative spiral. And so again, these are things that are in our control that I want us to focus on making sure we're meeting our body's needs, because then that's going to be empowering psychologically and especially during stressful times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up with sleep and making sure, you know, there's healthy habits with the schedule. With our schedules detracting from the quote unquote normal, I've noticed that sometimes, you know, the sleep schedule gets off or the eating schedule gets off a track of what our normal schedule used to be back when we were at the office most days and the kids were at school. So those are good tips for us to keep in mind. So I guess next, and you know, this idea of social distancing, as we've heard that, I don't know how many times in the media or on social media or our friends or family talking about it. You know, and now experts have started trying to change the conversation. I know Dr. Ohl mentioned this in his last press conference that he did. It's not so much social distancing, but physical distancing. We still want to stay socially connected. So I guess based on some of that thinking, you know, how do you translate this idea of resilience to our social needs as one of the four core areas?
So I like to ask people to think about the people that they're interacting with. I like to encourage people to try to find and grow supportive social connections where they feel respected, they feel trust. They're interacting with people who they feel are compassionate, who validate their feelings, people who energize them. Right? People who celebrate their joy, people who divide their grief. Those are the people who are going to help you build resilience. Those, I always say, those are your people, kind of your tribe that you really want to cultivate as much connectedness with as you can. I want my clients to surround themselves with as many of those people as possible. And I always say, if you feel worse after talking to someone, then they're probably not your resilience people.
Yeah.
And you want to just be intentional about trying to talk to people who are supporting you and enhancing your life. And right now we have to really get creative with that.
Yes. So
I think it always requires planning, just like the physical piece requires planning. You know, planning when you're going to see or talk to your people. Writing it on your calendar, protecting that time, even for the people with whom you live.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes when we get really busy and we come home from work or school and we're very tired, it's easy to neglect connecting even with the people we live with. So we see them every day, but I think being mindful of how we're connecting with them is really important. And a good way to do that is just to have routine times when, you know, you're going to make a point of debriefing with each other or, you know, having a meal together and talking about how everybody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
For people who we don't live with, again, it requires more planning and scheduling and use of technology, you know, FaceTime, Zoom, meetings with family, friends, and other groups that you're not able to see face-to-face right now. I mean, that has just exploded. And people are really benefiting from that means of staying socially connected. I love the way you said it should really be physical distancing, not social distancing, because we do need to foster those positive social connections. And then I think also when you are connecting with your people during times of crisis, letting them know what you need from them in terms of support. And there's no one right answer to this, but thinking about what it is for you that day or that week. When I know I'm going to have a busy week at work, I usually debrief with my family the Sunday before that week and let them know, hey, I've got a lot on my schedule. And here's what I'm going to need from you guys this week. And last week, that worked out really well for me. Two nights when I got home, my daughters had made dinner. So that was really nice. Awesome. You know, so sometimes logistical things that you need from your people, and sometimes it's more more emotional things like needing a cheerleader, needing words of affirmation to stay connected. So I think, you know, first step is picking your people and making sure that they're helpful and enhancing and supportive. The second step is planning when you're going to see, connect with them. And then the third is you've got to tell them what you need. Because even the best of friends and family who want very much to support you are not mind readers.
Yes.
So you have to think about what you need, and then you have to communicate what you need to them.
Yeah, that communication piece is so important. And it's funny, you know, it's no matter how many years you've been in a relationship, either, you know, with a spouse or significant other, or in a fatherly or motherly relationship, you know, we need reminders about the importance of communication. And I'm speaking from my own experience that, you know, sometimes it's helpful to get a reminder in that vein of, you know, it's important to keep the clear lines of communication open. It can make a huge difference.
Right. And it's a fluid process, you know, so what you need 1 week may be different from what you need the next week. So I think continuing to be mindful of what you need within yourself, and then communicating it to the people who are in your support group.
Yeah, that's a great point, Catherine. I appreciate you just reiterating that with us and our listeners. You know, as we kind of move down the list, that I think that flows pretty smoothly into the next area of cognitive needs. You know, it can seem though we can go kind of a few different ways with the way we think. Either we like to maybe sometimes shut down and maybe bury our head in the sand a little bit, especially in times of crisis like this, when we're feeling overwhelmed, or maybe the opposite of that, or you tell me if it's the opposite of that, as opposed to shutting down, it's just our mind just keeps going all the time. Like it can't shut off. It just bounces from one thing to the next. So how does this idea of resilience transfer to or translate over to the cognitive need area?
Right. Well, so the type of therapy that I practice in my practice is cognitive behavioral therapy. And so this is an area that I'm very passionate about. And I love to teach people about it, because I tell people your thoughts are your superpower. And they really are, because we're thinking all the time, but most people aren't thinking about their thoughts. Thoughts are kind of like breathing. They're happening automatically. So, you know, we breathe all day and all night, all the time we're breathing, but we're not thinking about it. It's just happening automatically. We breathe in, we breathe out all day long. And thoughts are the same way. They're happening automatically. They're floating in and out of our head and in and out of our awareness. But most of the time, we aren't exercising a lot of control over our thoughts. We're not really paying attention to them. So what I try to help people do is I try to help people start paying attention to their thoughts, because basically our thoughts are our self-talk. It's the way we're talking to ourselves all the time. So it's critical that we begin to pay attention to how we're thinking, asking ourselves whether it's healthy, whether it's unhealthy, and trying to take control of our thoughts. I really like metaphors. So one metaphor that I use with my clients is I tell them that we all have automatic thoughts that just pop up that oftentimes are very unhealthy, and we really don't have any control over that pop-up. And it's similar to the advertisements that pop up on the internet. So you know, I haven't found anything that is successful in blocking those internet ads. If you find it, I want you to tell me where you found it, because I think those ads are very frustrating. And they're frustrating because we can't find a way to control them. They pop up and they interrupt what we're trying to do, and they're trying to sell us something. So our automatic thoughts are very similar to those pop-up ads. They pop up. They are unsolicited. They interrupt what we're doing. And the automatic thoughts are usually trying to sell us negativity. So what I tell people is I usually ask people, and I'll ask you this now. So, Justin, when you're on the internet or working and an advertisement pops up, what do you usually do?
X out of it.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yes.
And that's what everybody I have ever asked that question, that's what everybody says. They say, I click on that little X in the right-hand corner to close out the ad. And so what I suggest to people is that I would like for them to be aware that when automatic negative thoughts pop up, you can treat them the same way. You can't necessarily control the thought popping up. I mean, that's just a part of being human, is that negative thoughts are going to pop up, especially when we're in stressful situations.
Yeah.
But you can control what you do with it after it pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to click on it, so to speak, like clicking on the advertisement to learn more about it and dwell on it longer.
Mm-hmm.
You can make the same choice that you would make if an ad popped up on the internet. You can exit out and be intentional about replacing it with something healthy. So, for example, if the automatic thought popped up and said to you, I'm so stupid,
mm-hmm.
You could continue to dwell on that, and how do you think you're going to feel if you continue dwelling on that? You're going to feel really awful, maybe stressed, maybe depressed. It's not going to have a positive impact on you. So
yeah.
I would like to see people be more aware of thoughts like that and replace it with a more rational thought, like, okay, instead of saying I'm so stupid, saying I made a mistake, everyone makes mistakes. I'll learn from it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a lot more, I think, realistic. And I wouldn't say that it's necessarily positive, but it's definitely moving into a healthier frame of reference.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's so helpful. You know, I think what you initially talked about there was just that we need to be mindful of our, be thinking of our thoughts, to be able to capture that, to be able to switch it and turn it from a negative to more constructive, right? So we need to like it's like breathing. So we're doing it automatically. All these ideas or thoughts are popping in or popping up. So we need to pause for a moment. Would you say, is that something that would help us to maybe get a hold of these thoughts to replace it with a more constructive thought?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I tell people, I say, ask yourself if you would talk that way to a friend.
Yeah.
And if what you're saying to yourself, if you would not say that to a friend, then you shouldn't talk that way to yourself either. And so I think that's a good kind of litmus test, so to speak, of, you know, asking yourself, would I say that to a friend? And then that's a good cue to redirect. And then, you know, just paying attention to your red flags. Everybody has experiences anxiety and depression and intense emotions in different ways. But if you're starting to experience an intense emotion, that's a good red flag to then try to analyze and pay attention to the way you're thinking at that point in time, because your thoughts are probably feeding it.
Yeah. Well, that's very helpful information. You know, and I think maybe one way we might be able to take a pause, and it's, I think, goes right into the fourth core area our need area is the spiritual need area, where if we're doing a quiet time or meditation time, that could maybe help with this idea of pausing and being able to identify the negative thoughts and the positive thoughts. So if you just want to talk about the idea of resilience as it relates to the spiritual area, I think that would be helpful to listeners.
Absolutely. Sure. So spiritual needs really involve activities that are finding meaning and purpose and value in your life. Spiritual needs are meeting our needs for love and belonging and connectedness. Spiritual needs can specifically be religious, but even people with no religious faith have belief systems and activities that give their lives meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. So for everyone, sometimes I talk to people and they say, well, I'm not religious, so I don't think I have any spiritual needs. And then when I explain this broader definition of spiritual needs to them, that they really usually, they're able to identify some ways that they experience the meeting of their spiritual needs. There's no one-size-fits-all. What you need to meet your spiritual needs might change from day to day. But I like for people to think about what they need that day. So I often ask people, in the morning when you wake up, try to ask yourself, what do I need today? What would feed me today in terms of, feeling meaning or purpose or, feeling at peace or feeling connected? And so, when I phrase it that way, you can imagine there could be such a broad array of ways that people might meet those needs. It might be nature, might be time outside, time with people that they love, so kind of back to that social need, time doing things that they love. Mm-hmm. Some people really need time alone, quiet time. Some people, it's meditation. It may be devotion, prayer, study. Service to others is a really important way that a lot of people meet their spiritual needs.
Yeah.
So, and another one that I think is critical is practicing gratitude, making gratitude, and that also ties back in with the cognitive piece.
Yeah.
That we know an insulating factor for people in times of crisis is that capability to see the good. You remember Mr. Rogers used to always say, look for the helpers in times of crisis. And that is really profound. I mean, that's a way that Mr. Rogers pointed out that even when things are falling apart and we're in a major crisis, there are helpers. There are people diving into the crisis to do service to others. So I think spending some time on mindfulness and meditation and gratitude every day, and you can do this in so many different ways, is a critical way to really simultaneously meet spiritual needs, but also cognitive needs and maybe even social if you practice this gratitude in the context of your family.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I appreciate you sharing that information as well, Catherine. This is really good information. I hope, the people listening are getting some nuggets that they can put in the back of their minds and pull out to help them when they need it, especially during this, this, we hear it a lot of times of uncertainty with coronavirus or unprecedented times. So this is helpful information for sure. We're getting ready to close our time in with you today, and I appreciate you taking the time to share this information with us about resilience and, what it is and how we can apply it to the four core need areas. So it's good information. As we close, I want to offer the idea of what people can do if they need to contact us. They can just go to our website, wakehealth.edu, and search behavioral health. If they need to talk to someone or reach out to someone, you can also call 716-WAKE, 736-716-WAKE. and we can put you through to the right people to connect you for anyone who's listening out there. So, Catherine, thanks so much. This has been great. I hope you come back and visit with us again sometime.
Thank you for having me, Justin. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So everyone listening out there, if you found any of this helpful or useful, please share it with your friends, your family members, your loved ones, your coworkers, and we'll keep providing additional podcasts through the Best Health Channel and through the Wake Forest Baptist Health Channels as well. So everyone listening out there, appreciate your time. And so we chat again. Please be well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Best Health Podcast, brought to you by Wake Forest Baptist Health. For more wellness info, check out wakehealth.edu/besthealth and follow us on social media. Wake Forest Baptist Health, care for life.